Today is September 28th, 2025. Current Bitcoin price is $109,863.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
Hey everyone, I do want to start off by apologizing that we've been kind of out of the mix for a bit here. We basically missed, what, a month, Rick?
Basically. Actually, a little over.
A little bit over a month. Yeah, it was. Looks like it was August 27th was the last time we did an episode. So it's just over by one day, it looks like. I mean, depending on how you look at it, months are always different. But I apologize. I had some personal family matter stuff that I was dealing with, and I didn't feel like I could do this podcast justice during that time. My head was elsewhere. So, we apologize for such a prolonged outage. I think this is the longest one that we've done where we've gone this long without recording. But we're back and we're going to try and get back on track. And I do apologize for that, but life sometimes gets in the way. Looking at this, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of taken place. Price wise hasn't been too crazy. Looks like from the last time we recorded, we are at $111,459. Price has been kind of teetering around. September was expected to be sort of a down month. And it looks like for the most part, we just kind of stuck sideways. We'll have to, sideways and down. We'll have to see what the market does today as we close out the week, but we still have a couple more days afterwards to close out the month. And then we go into what they typically call October. So we'll have to see how that kind of plays out. But what are we looking at with our theoreticals right now, Rick?
So first theoretical purchase back in October 2023, $3,000 would have bought you 0.0885 Bitcoin. That $3,000 investment is now worth $9,723. So, I mean, we've seen it much higher. But it's still, you know, you're doing over three times as good. Theoretical buy number two at the previous halving, April 19th, 2024. If you put $1,000 down right at that point, you would have got 0.01564 Bitcoin. And that is now worth, that $1,000 is now worth 1,718. So 71% still up in a year and a half. Well, maybe a year and a few months. So still not too bad.
Still not bad, but still not what we would expect to see, I think, of this bull market. And we've talked about that repeatedly. Like, this has been a very unusual bull market.
Yes. Well, a couple things that are kind of leaning against what's happened is really we hit an all-time high before the halving.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of. In a weird way, this bull market feels like it's gone on longer than anyone we've ever experienced.
Yeah, and I still don't know if we're going to be done yet. I'm wondering if this bull market's going to extend a little bit further than what we were expecting. It depends on, I guess, how October plays out.
Yeah, I have no idea. Anybody who says they have an idea is full of crap, or they're just putting in a lucky guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because I think back at the beginning of the year, we talked about this and we said, you know, moving into September into October, I think we were talking about, you know, we're going to probably have the blow off. And I haven't felt that exuberance. I haven't seen that. You know, retail has been largely absent. It's been corporations and institutions with the ETFs and those types of markets.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things too, and we may have to dive into this a little bit. I would want to see some hard data on this. There's been a lot of discussion about paperback Bitcoin and how that could be influencing the price. We see it with the gold market, right? With ETFs within gold, where there's way more paper than there actually is supply. The difference though, is that we have the receipts for Bitcoin to where we know what should exist out there. And I'm sure the people that are out there, they are watching that, but I haven't heard anything. I've just heard rumors of it.
Yeah. And that's the thing with gold is you don't know who's has what in whose vault, and they have, you know, the certificates that they have so much gold. Whereas the Bitcoin, every Bitcoin is accounted for in every wallet. So that's a totally different thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. They can still see the moves. Everything goes back and forth. When we look at the ETF chart, which I loaded up into our Discord discussion here, for the most part, it's nothing crazy, but it's been mainly inflows. There's been a couple days of outflows. It looks like we had outflows on the 17th. It looks like the 22nd, 23rd, 25th. Now, the 26th, it looks like there was $418 million worth of outflows. And even BlackRock sold some off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty big day on the 26th.
Yeah.
Or not good big, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's still big, which no matter how you want to kind of slice that up, there's been a lot of movement in the market still. You know, we continue to hear institutions that are buying, and you know, there's announcements every day, and yet the price is moving down on some of the news. But I mean, a lot of that could be the larger macro environment in which Bitcoin is currently existing with the way that everything else is going. So kind of to make up for the time that we've lost, we have four topics we're going to discuss today, basically that are coming out of the news from the macro environment. First one's going to be the Fed rate cut. Finally happened.
Yes. Finally. And I predicted last time we were together that it wasn't going to happen. I was like, yeah, Jerome Powell's just going to dig in his heels. And he did, but he did the minimum amount, really.
Yeah, yeah. We got a cut by 25 basis points. It brought the Fed rate to 4 to 4.25%. Apparently, there was a split decision that took place there. It was the new Fed governor, Stephen Miron, pushed for a deeper. He wanted a 50 basis point cut. Jerome Powell timed the cut, citing tariff impacts and reaffirming Fed independence. There's a possibility that they're saying that they may still have three more cuts this year. But what's important is that this has actually been the first rate cut for 2025. But the markets didn't react the way that I think a lot of people were expecting it to.
Well, generally, when the Fed decides to cut rates, it's usually a bad sign for the economy. And some people get kind of spooked by that, too.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, a lot of times Fed rate cuts are really bad for signal for the stock market. So that it's kind of a, you know, sometimes it's good. Oh, it's going to increase activity. And then other ones like, whoa, what's going on here? So.
Well, and
how the market takes it.
I think it's one of those things to keep in mind, like talking with people that are like, oh yeah, no, the Fed's going to cut rates. Like the positive side is that I can't even say there's a positive side. The positive side is it makes it cheaper for borrowing. So that means more money printing.
Exactly.
So that's a slippery slope, right? Like they've been wanting to rein that in. At least they moved to a point where they have some room to cut rates. But I don't know if it's enough. Now, part of that also ties in with, I think, what we're going to talk about next, and that's the job report revision. We saw something similar to this with Biden's term right before the election, right?
Yeah, sometime in 2024, they revised down a number of jobs. It was basically a million jobs.
Yeah.
It was like 980,000 jobs or something like that. It was just like, wow, what happened there?
Yeah, Bureau of Labor Statistics revised job growth down 911 jobs for the year ending March 2024. It basically went from 146,000 to just 70,000, barely keeping up with population growth. August added 22,000 jobs, fueling concerns about stagnation. Trump fired the Bureau of Labor Statistics commissioner after a week reporting raising issues. The slower job growth signals a cooling of the economy, less consumer spending, weaker wage pressure, and potential justification for further Fed rate cuts, which we kind of expected. But at the same time, you brought up that we may actually be in a recession that they're not signaling.
Yep. And that's kind of, it seemed like the MO for the Biden administration was just to inflate the job numbers, pretend the numbers were better than they are. Most people didn't believe it. And that's why Trump ended up winning, I think. But that's kind of the same thing, as everyone's just trying to keep this momentum going. Trump wants big interest rate cuts to keep, you know, keep that money printer going, get the money flowing. And, you know, I think we're in a recession. We're going to look back at this time and go, oh, yeah, we're in a recession.
Yeah.
We just don't know it yet.
Yeah. And I mean, how far back do you think that recession goes? I mean, because we talked about this back in, was it 23?
Yeah.
When they first kind of, I don't want to say they redefined what a recession was, but it felt like they kind of redefined what a recession was. And at this point, if it's been for that long, it's not a recession, it's a depression.
Well, I think the depression is also a certain amount of loss as well, not just the length. But yeah, they didn't redefine it. They just ignored the definition. They called it a not recession. And, you know, being the corporate media being complete lackeys for the Biden administration, they just went with it. You know, if Trump had these type of numbers, they would have hung him out to dry on those. They would have been hammering it. So, yeah, it's hard to say how long we've been in it. I think it's been at least a couple of years. I don't know. For most people that I know, when Biden took office in 2021 to when he left office, it was a pretty rough 4 years for most people that I know.
Yeah. And I think
myself, to be honest.
I think it continues to be that way. I think we continue to have people that are, when you look at the debt alone, people's debt is just skyrocketing and it doesn't stop. And there's been no relief. Because something that's kind of interesting for a lot of consumers in America, their credit card debt interest rate is tied to the Fed interest rate. Now, it's hugely multiplied, right? Like, I mean, they'll charge 30%, but when the Fed raises their interest rate, so do the credit card companies. And when you have these families that are living off a credit card debt rather than being able to make it on their own means, it just continues to snowball, basically. And, you know, for some people that may not have maybe great credit, they don't have good assets in place, like they maxed out on what they can borrow and do all these things with. So, I mean, it's getting a lot harder for people. We see it like within the housing market. People can't afford homes, especially the younger folks. Like if you're not already in the housing market, you're more than likely not going to be able to get into it. Wages have not been able to keep up with the inflation and just kind of the cost of everything. So it's scary.
We are perfectly set up for stagflation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what we're in it. I don't know I don't know the path out either.
I don't know either. I mean, Ray Dalio talks about what he calls the beautiful deleveraging, which scares a lot of people. I mean, part of it, the baby boomers don't want their assets, which is mainly like their homes and their stocks, to be affected. And it's hard to not do some of that deleveraging without impacting those assets like that. It goes back to so much of the population. The only way they can get out of their paycheck to paycheck mindset and kind of their lifestyle is they've got to be able to own hard assets. And in the past, that's always been housing, typically. People always understood housing. Like you buy a house, it goes up in value. The longer that people sit on the sidelines and they're not buying stocks, they're not buying any hard assets, not buying gold, not buying silver, not buying Bitcoin, all of that just piles on top of them, and their money's just becoming that ice cube. But we've talked about that so much on this podcast, and that's part of the reason why we wanted to do this podcast, was to educate people about the beauties of Bitcoin and like really what it can do for your life and help you financially, and also just to make you aware of what's going on within the government and their printing and their policies that are really, it's horrible. They're predatory. People want the emotional response from the government to take care of people. But the problem is everything's got to get paid for. Nobody wants to be taxed more. So they're just going to inflate this money supply and pay for their services that way, which basically steals from everybody, even though they don't realize it.
Exactly.
Sorry, that was a little bit of a rant.
The government has no, or the politicians have no incentive to fix this, because fixing this is going to be painful. Mm-hmm. Everyone's incentivized just to kick this can down the road. Let it be somebody else's problem.
Yep. Yeah.
And when these days, they're not going to be able to kick it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, I mean, they constantly say, you know, they're stealing from your children. Well, what that means is they're kicking that can down the road to where
they're purchasing power.
Yeah. They're stealing from your future. To finance today.
They're stealing their purchasing power today, and then they're stealing from their future because all that debt has to be repaid tomorrow. So it's like a double whammy. And, you know, kids coming up today, it's a really unfair setup that they're walking right into.
Yeah. Yeah. And so much of it too has been tied to the fact that we are the reserve currency of the world. Which I think one of the best comparisons I've ever heard is that we're like a heavyweight boxer that has been in multiple fights. And, you know, we've been able to take a lot of damage, but what's going to start to happen is that damage is going to start to show. I've always liked the junkie analogy too, right?
Yep.
Where you got to keep on getting those injections. Take that hit.
Those injects, that hit of the cash.
Yep.
And then, but the bigger the hit, you know, as we've develop that tolerance, it's almost like the less it does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And that's going to lead kind of right into our next big story. And this is something we kind of touched on before. But Russia stablecoin rumor. There's rumors going around in Russia right now. Putin advisor Anton, and I'm going to say his name wrong, Kobyakov, claims the U.S. is using stablecoins and gold to rewrite the rules and devalue the $37 trillion of debt. Senator Cynthia Lummis's Bitcoin Act proposes acquiring 1 million Bitcoin to retire federal debt. U.S. officials say stablecoins reinforce dollar dominance and reduce auction risk. Russia counters with its ruble-backed A7A5 stablecoin for oil trade with China and India. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard this idea of, you know, rebalancing, you know, what you have in your, whatever we have in Fort Knox, we've not gotten audit. But let's just say they have so much gold, and then they revalue the gold. You know, right now it's trading at what, $3,600?
Gold right now is $3,758.
$750, wow, it's even higher.
Mm-hmm.
So $3,700. Let's say we just took it from that and then we took it all the way up to 20, 30, maybe even 40 grand an ounce. It's like, okay, we have the gold to repay our debt now. I mean, that would basically just kind of devalue everyone's debt that they're holding, but it'd be kind of a weird get out of jail free card. And the other option to include on that would be Bitcoin, whatever they have in their treasury. They say, okay, we're going to revalue it at X, you know, and they'd have to increase that value pretty significantly from the 109 that we're at right now to, you know, something greater. But that's something that's potentially in their playbook. And I do believe that the stable coins is kind of a way to offload some of the debt that they have and some of the treasuries. Basically, I mean, how I look at U.S. treasuries, just the amount of debt that America has, the government has, I look at treasuries as toxic sludge, to borrow a term from Bitcoin University. I mean, it's useless.
Yep.
It's going to destroy you. But that's a place where they're dumping it, is the stable coins. And I'm not really a fan of stable coins. I'm not saying it doesn't have a use. Just the fact that that's where a lot of this debt is going just makes me very apprehensive about it.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see, like, whatever's happening with that right now, a lot of it was based off, like I said, off the Clarity Act. And so we're kind of waiting to see how this is going to play out. I mean, some of the moves are already happening behind the scenes, but it's not until I think we see the strategic Bitcoin reserve really get adopted. If Cynthia Lummis's stablecoin bill with the 1 million Bitcoin gets kind of across the goal line, I think then you'll see kind of things kick into full swing. You know, and I talked about this where my concern, and this kind of goes back to when we look at housing prices and asset prices in general, they don't want to take that away from the boomers. They need to inflate the money supply, but they don't want to impact those assets currently. Like, they can't make housing more unaffordable than what it already is. That's going to be detrimental, even worse than what it currently is. So they need a place that they can inflate the money without affecting those hard assets that way. And I really think that's where we look at Bitcoin and the stablecoin market as kind of a pressure relief valve to the system. That's been my theory with the whole thing.
Yeah. And if they do that, I mean, it's kind of really hard to get into gold as it is with, you know, $3,700 an ounce. But if they revalue it, I mean, everyone else is also priced out of getting into gold at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you were talking about something earlier that, how long ago was it you were talking about? It needed to be revalued to 15,000. And that was how many years ago?
Yeah. Jim Rickards in a book, I think it was something like Aftershock. He's kind of a financial guy, and he was talking about the debt that we had in 2019. He wrote this book right before the 2020 COVID crash and all that stuff. But he was thinking that there was going to be some type of really bad economic thing happening. And one thing he recommended that the Fed do at the time was revalue gold at $15,000 an ounce, and then they'd be able to continue going from there. They can monetize their debt. The problem with that is that's not what we did in 2020. What we did was we basically tripled the money supply since then, roughly. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, his $15,000 an ounce would be now $45,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
I mean, and I do really think that 5-digit gold is going to be right around the corner. I mean, if I was going to make another theoretical purchase, maybe I would buy an ounce of gold today.
That'd be an interesting crack too. And so, I mean, that goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning there. Like, if you don't have those hard assets, that's the biggest thing that differentiates. Like, when we talk about the billionaires of the world and stuff like that, people need to keep in mind, somebody like, Ellison from Oracle, Elon Musk, when they talk about their net worth being in these billions, like 378 billion, whatever the case may be, that's not liquid cash, right? That's assets.
That's assets. It's the stocks for them, different companies that they have. It's their investments, which are usually very tied up. Mm-hmm. And they keep cash on hand as low as possible because that's the melting ice cube.
Yeah.
The longer, when you leave it out, it disappears. So absolutely, they're incentivized not to do that.
I think I've talked about this. I've got marks from Germany prior to, you know, Hitler taking over, Weimar Republic stuff, where
the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, it's like $100,000 notes and they're worthless. That's exactly what happens. That money inflates to where it's worth nothing. It's not even worth the paper that it's printed on.
Yeah.
That's the ice cube. And what goes up is the assets, is the stocks, is the homes, is the hard money. It is the gold. It is the silver. It is the Bitcoin. That's the only way you're going to get ahead in this world. I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Nope. So the one good thing, gold may be out of your reach shortly, but even if Bitcoin goes to 1 million things, you can buy it in the Satoshis.
Yeah.
So stack them sats while you can today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it, you don't have to, you dollar cost average, you buy a little bit at a time. It adds up. I mean, there's talks now, like it used to be, you know, and I hate to say this, but I think for most people now at this point, getting to one Bitcoin is almost impossible. Not completely impossible, depending on, you know, your financial situation, but try to get to a tenth of a Bitcoin. That's still doable. But you don't have to buy it all at once. You can buy fractions. You can stack a little bit at a time. Sacrifice that one day. You don't need a coffee. You'd be fine without it. Just buy the Bitcoin that day. Do that a few times a month. Make it a habit. And then, like, it becomes this obsession in some way where you're like, well, man, I want to collect more and more and more. It's not going to hurt you. It's only going to benefit you in the future, especially. Last thing we're going to kind of go over here is there's been a battle going on between Bitcoin Core and Knots. I think we kind of touched on this once before. I think we do need to do a little bit more further research. We may have to do an episode where we talk about paperback Bitcoin and this Core versus Knots battle. But basically, you know, they're talking about it as being the battle for Bitcoin's soul. Basically, what's happening is there's two different groups right now that exist. There's Bitcoin Core, and then there's the Knots group. Bitcoin Core traditionally has been kind of the biggest group of folks that work on keeping the Bitcoin protocol basically working as it should. You know, they look at updates, stuff like that, and then it's up to the node runners to decide whether they're going to adopt revisions that the Bitcoin Core suggest. Right. Traditionally, that's the way that it's worked, is that if the node runners decide, okay, yes, this type of upgrade from Core looks like it's a good idea, the number of nodes they have to have a certain threshold. It's got to be over 50% of the nodes accept this change, and then all of a sudden, okay, well, then this upgrade is put in place. Well, there's been some infighting between the Core devs, and then they kind of splintered off, and there's now a new group called the Knots, which basically, you know, they're saying Core devs want to remove the 80 byte limit to enable richer data use within the Bitcoin protocol. And there's a few things that are scary about that. What was one of the things you were kind of talking about? One that would be specifically bad.
Well, one would be CSAM, also known as child sexual assault material. Basically, you know, images of children and that kind of thing. If you can store pictures on there, there's going to be some bad actor who will put that kind of thing onto the ledger. And then at that point, everybody who's running a Bitcoin Core node will be sharing that and will have it on their system.
And you got to remember, like, once that's in place, that record is immutable.
Yes.
It can't go away. So that's been a huge, huge controversy. The Knots protocol, on the other hand, was led by Luke Dashjer and Peter Todd. And this invites spam and dilutes Bitcoin's monetary focus, which is absolutely true. I think there was part of this kind of arose during the NFT craze from the previous cycle, where, a lot of people have talked about, like, you know, Bitcoin, whether you're looking at Ethereum, whether you're looking at ADA, you know, whatever the case may be, all of these can be implemented into Bitcoin. All it requires is a software upgrade. And so what they're, you know, they're trying, I don't know if they were trying to just demonstrate, like, look, you can actually get these on Bitcoin as well. And, you know, what's the point of having all these other protocols if Bitcoin can do all the same thing? The other problem with it is that we go back to, like, if you start to increase the block size, and it's not necessarily the block size, but the limit, I guess, on the what information is within the transactions, that causes an issue with decentralization again. It's almost back to the block size war, where you can bloat what it takes to hold a copy of the ledger rather than having it, you know, on a little node device, which is like a mini computer that anybody pretty much can run. I'm not going to say, like, everybody, because, I mean, they're not super cheap, but they're not super expensive either. Anybody can run this and secure the network. And so whenever you look at inflating that, and then all of a sudden, well, it's going to take terabytes of information to be able to store this thing, that's where it kind of gets off the rails. And I think that's one of the big things that they fight about between the two. Basically, there's two different camps on this. Knots aligned with Ocean Backs, and I've got to do more information on that. Ocean Backs Datum Coraline pools support Stratum version 2. There's been a big increase within the knots usage. It's up 17%, which is basically signaling there's a protest against Core because of what they're about to do with Core version 30. And it looks like there's supposed to be an October release for that, which could be a potential flashpoint between this battle between knots and Core. Basically, I mean, if we want to keep Bitcoin decentralized, we got to make sure that regular people can run a node. And we need to keep it clean where it's not going to have all this, what would you call it? I mean, stupid stuff, like spam stuff?
Spam and trash.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
We don't want that within the network. So we need to keep it clean and stripped down. And it needs to be focused on monetary transactions. I don't mind the little messages that are encoded into it, like where it's, you know, Satoshi's initial message where it was Chancellor reduces rates, whatever the case may be. That's not a big deal. But when you start to actually include novels and JPEGs and all this other junk that doesn't belong in your monetary supply, that's where I think it causes the huge issue.
Yep. No, this is going to be an interesting battle. It's last I saw it was over 20%. Now has switched over to knots. So that's at least 1/5 of the mining that's being done is on that. So we'll do a little bit more research on this and see if we can provide a little bit more insight on what's going on.
Yeah.
Maybe we can be swayed. Maybe we find that this is better. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but we'll see.
I've got the knots API, like I've said, installed on my node right now. I haven't made the switch over. I talked about that actually on the collaboration episode that we did with the Build a Mine podcast. And I need to make the switch, but I haven't done it yet. And I don't know. I need to understand it more. I feel like I want to understand it better. I want to continue to support Bitcoin and I want to continue to support what I consider the soul of Bitcoin. I don't want it to be this JPEG trash dumpster fire. But I don't know. I don't know why Core sees it so differently and why, you know, what is their reasoning behind it? I need to understand that.
I agree. I don't know. More to come.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your patience. Sorry we're gone so long, though.
I agree. Yeah. And I apologize. And I know we may not have a huge audience, but we do have an audience. And we do appreciate each one of you that do listen and kind of give us your attention during this time. Let's hope October breaks out as a quite a bit better month for Bitcoin. We'll have to see what happens. If you do want to get your own hardware wallet and you are deciding you are going to buy some Bitcoin and you want to do self-sovereignty, we do have deals on our webpage, and that's at www.thebitbytepodcast.com under the deals tab. And you can get an Elipal or a Ledger there. And you're buying directly from the website. It's just an affiliate link through us. So it helps the podcast out. Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up today?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you again for the patience. And we will talk to you again this next week.
Bye.